But we begin with your civil liberties under the Constitution. And it's probably great that Jane Henniger is the new head of the ACLU of Indiana is here, because there's people worried about this whole the spy who loved me thing with General Petraeus and now some other general and all these women and emails. Not so much about that sin, but concern about the federal government peeking in your email. And where does that line stop? This may become an ACLU case. General Petraeus may be calling the American Civil Liberties Union and say, wait a minute, if I was not sending in the email, why were you peeking in my email? Jane Henniger is the executive director of the ACLU of Indiana. She joins me live. Jane, welcome.
Thanks, Amos. Thanks for having me here.
There are probably people that have heard the initials ACLU but don't understand what y'all do. What are you? What's your mission?
So our initials stand for American Civil Liberties Union. And here in Indiana, this ACLU of Indiana is an affiliate of a national organization. So we work at the national level and at the state level all across the country. We've got affiliates in every state. And we defend your civil liberties. And principally what that means is that when the government, in whatever form, school board all the way up to the federal government, if it threatens to violate your rights under the Constitution, we're there to represent you. And we're often there when no one else is willing to do it.
Is there confusion in the minds of people, particularly in the African-American community, between civil liberties and civil rights?
Well, they're not wholly independent. Mm-hmm. Many of the civil rights that most people think of derive from the civil liberties that are enshrined in our Constitution, and specifically our due process rights and equal protection rights in the 14th and 15th Amendments. And a lot of our civil rights laws that affect private action right. are derivative of those core constitutional values.
You get a lot of attention because of cases that you bring, but you all don't bring the case as the ACLU of Indiana. An individual has to be willing to step up to the plate, take the slings and arrows for you all to get behind them. You all just won a case that involved the Bureau of Motor Vehicles suspending people's driver's licenses, but they don't even have a car.
Right.
There's probably people listening that this affected and they didn't even realize that they had a right that you all stood up for.
Exactly. And you point out, Amos, one of the problems with the ACLU is that we get confused. Our mission gets confused with the mission of the people that we represent. Mm-hmm. So we don't need to ambulance chase, mm-hmm. right? Through the 92 years of the national organization, the 60, almost 60 years, next year it'll be 60 years, that we've had an affiliate here in Indiana, we don't have to look for work. There's plenty of work to be done. We can't do all of the cases that come to us, unfortunately. And it is instances where people's rights have been violated, and we help them remedy those rights.
There are a couple of cases you all are involved in. One has to do with a school district in one of the smaller towns around here where a school board members are chosen by – it's a consolidated school district, so they're chosen by township?
Well, I don't know all the ins and outs, but they haven't they're voted on by districts and right. how they've defined originally those districts. I don't exactly know, but mm-hmm. they haven't updated it. So over the years, just as any area right. grows in any county, the population has moved, subdivisions have been built. So as it turns out over the years, that some districts have 10 times as many people as other districts, mm-hmm. which obviously, if you're voting in a district that only has, say, 10 people in it, right. you get to vote for a representative that represents a smaller number. Your vote in lots of ways has more meaning. And that's just an example of one of a couple of cases we have about the sanctity of our right to vote, which is core to our identity as Americans, and we want to make sure that we not only have the right to vote in on paper or in theory, but that that our vote counts. And so, in Indiana, we had one of the first challenges to the voter ID law. Unfortunately, ours wasn't as successful, but the ACLU across the country has been extremely active in fighting all the different ways that access to the ballot's been challenged.
Could that open up the door to another challenge of Indiana's law, given some of these other challenges seem to have been working in other states?
The challenge to the Indiana law went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Right. If there is a subsequent decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that calls into question the decision they made in our previous case, then absolutely. And you know, as we all believe, it's a battle worth keeping the fight on.
Just before the election, you all filed suit about how Marion County chooses judges. What's that about?
The way that when voters went into the voting booth on November 6th last week, they were given the option of choosing among 20 candidates for judge in Marion County. They may have also noticed that there were 20 slots for those 20 judges. The process as it's structured now makes it so that when you walk in the booth as in a general election voter, you don't really have a choice. Mm-hmm. Whether you vote or not, those 20 judges are going to get into those 20 slots. It's a system that's unique to Marion County and may have been designed to find the best way of choosing judges. But it isn't the best. We aren't saying in the lawsuit what is the best approach. That's for the policymakers and the legislators to figure out. But all we know is that telling a voter that their vote is meaningful when it doesn't matter whether they cast their vote or not, those 20 candidates, are going to fill those 20 seats.
239-1310, 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. We're Jane Henninger, the executive director of the ACLU of Indiana. Let me start today with Dave. Hi there.
How you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
I would like to ask your guest a question. Now, I know under the Patriot Act, the government kind of gathers in all this cyber communications that they're looking for certain key code words that would precipitate looking into further. Now, in these emails that were given to this Broadwell and the general, I would really doubt if any of these key code words were involved in any of these conversations. This is just absolutely outrageous, the invasion of the privacy of these emails when it was known right away that there was no security breach or anything of the kind going on here. This was a, and as much as I hate to say this, is a private affair, as we know one has taken place before, but he was not in the military at the time when this happened, and although it is a very particular situation that should not have ever happened, but humans being humans, things happen. So, but this is, we're looking at now two generals that are going to be disgraced and run out of the service more than likely, and this man has already had to resign from the CIA. It is a huge loss to this country, a huge loss. And you have two other relationships are going to be destroyed. For what? And I'm just wondering if the ACLU thinks about the situation, whether somebody brings a case forward or not. I would imagine if anybody does, Mr. Broadwell will probably bring it.
You know, Dave, we might have some common ground on this issue because, you know, the way you state that, and I think you stated it very accurately, I think people do need to be concerned as to what was the trigger to start snooping in your email. Let me let Jane Henninger respond. Because, again, you all cannot get into it unless one of the parties involved requests you to get in.
Well, we certainly don't go around asking people if we can represent them, for the most part, again, because we don't need to. They usually come to us, mm-hmm. and I can think of instances when they haven't. The ACLU in general has grave reservations about the Patriot Act, and we've had cases nationally contesting it. From what I understand of this particular unfortunate circumstance, I hesitate to use the word affair because obviously that's more complicated than that. My understanding is that it really isn't necessarily a Patriot Act problem because it was a very circuitous route that led them to General Petraeus and originating with a cyber bullying violation that the FBI was exploring, investigating on behalf of a private individual, and it led to this very circuitous path.
But is it also because this was not his email account that was at CIA.gov? This was his Gmail account, his personal account. And I think there is some confusion today among people in this country that there are some workplaces that put restrictions on their employees' use of their personal email, their Twitter, their Facebook, and gives the company some, depending on what your agreement is with your company, what the company policies is, companies can, somehow, get access to, or you can be disciplined based upon what you write or say in your personal email account if you are acting as if you're still a part of the company.
I think I absolutely.
I mean, this gray area we're coming on in terms of civil liberties.
Right, right. I was a way to think about it, Amos. I think about the challenge of technology mm-hmm. to understanding the boundaries that government can and cannot cross, and in relation to our privacy, in relation to due process. Technology has been a boon to civilization. It's been a great gift in so many ways, but it's a powerful tool. And any powerful tool in the hands of the government can be misused until it's used properly. And the Patriot Act and use of technology to spy on people domestically is a powerful tool, just like with the Supreme Court last year looked at a case where police had put a GPS unit on a car and then went home to bed. And right. for the next week, this guy was driving around in his car being virtually cyberly followed. Mm-hmm. And the question is, did he have a privacy expectation when no one's tailing him, but he's being tracked right. by GPS? And that was deemed a little bit too far. But those kinds of questions come up constantly.
So the court said, no, you can't just throw the GPS on somebody's car without them.
Right.
The court
right.
said that.
Right.
Robert said
yeah.
that.
Yeah. The Roberts
okay.
court said that. But, our BMV case is an example of the technology. The BMV could keep a list and could start sorting in a way that technology has allowed them to, that they previously weren't capable. But it gave them too much power, and they misused it by arbitrarily knocking people, taking people's away as people's licenses. So, it's groups like the ACLU that have to be vigilant in government and say, this is a powerful tool. It can maybe be used for great things. It can keep us safe.
Mm-hmm.
But it can also violate our privacy in ways that none of us are comfortable with.
Let me go to another Dave at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, Amos. From my understanding, I heard it was like a couple of Republican lawmakers that really got the ball rolling on this thing, and I guess they're kind of upset about this Benghazi thing that's going on. But what I don't understand is they're making a big deal about Benghazi, but Bush fell asleep and didn't listen to the CIA. Or intelligence briefing, and 3,000 Americans died.
An FBI agent tipped off a Republican congressman, and he went to the Republican majority leader in the House, Eric Cantor, and Congressman Cantor went to Robert Mueller, the director of the FBI. But the Republicans never took this public because either A, they did not believe the seriousness of the charges, or they were being real patriots in terms of let's let this wait until the election. This shouldn't be something that looks before the election. But no, there were Republicans did not start this. This kind of started, with these emails, and there's so much stuff is coming out. I don't think we really know, the whole story yet. And I think there's issues of, as the first Dave said, concern from both the right and the left in terms of was the monitoring of personal emails. Did the FBI follow the rules? Did they go too far? What exactly were they looking at? And I think there's a lot of things that still need to come out. I appreciate the call. Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yes, Amos, thank you for taking my call. I'm really not concerned about that mess. I think they're making it a big deal so that they can not work on the cliffhanger that we really need to be working on.
Okay.
I'm not in the least bit interested in Petraeus or the other gentleman. What if they do? Is their business as long as it has nothing to do with security? And the person they need to be dealing with apparently is the woman who seems to be running her mouth quite a bit. And I really am not concerned about it. And the Republicans are pushing this. I'm sorry, you're wrong.
Okay.
I just watched some crazy ones say some crazy things. But I'm not interested in it. My concern is, I'm glad that you have the lady on there. People that really did some horrible things during the election and continue to do them, that should be our concern. Where does this money come from? What's going to happen with these people who gave, or these whatever, corporations, whatever gave all this money? And Chamber of Commerce, I'm really concerned about them because they were very, very hostile towards the president and tried to see that he get not get reelected. And there are some serious issues here in Indiana that need to be dealt with. And, I'm just really concerned about Mike Pence being in there.
All right, I appreciate that. Let me ask Jane Henninger. The Supreme Court said that corporations have a civil liberty to be able to spend whatever they want to promote whatever message they want. Where's the ACLU come down on this whole campaign finance thing, or is that a civil liberty, part of freedom of speech?
The ACLU, this is a demonstration how the ACLU is a nonpartisan organization. We advocate for everyone's civil liberties. And in this instance, with the Citizens United case, we believe that the First Amendment right and political speech should be as unfettered as possible. So, that's a controversial view among a lot of people who usually agree with our positions. But I think that this election in some ways proves that if enough speech gets out, mm-hmm. and we're all concerned about the money for a variety of reasons, but if enough speech gets out in the marketplace of ideas, the truth will come out and the truth will win. I have great faith in human beings and their ability to penetrate falsehoods, to penetrate insincerity, and allow the value of speech, which is why it's protected, why it's the number one right in our Bill of Rights.
2-3 Go ahead. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's Names. We'll take a break. We'll be back with Jane Henninger, head of the Chamber of Commerce, Greater Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce, coming up. It's Afternoon's with Amos on a busy Tuesday. All right, with Jane Henninger of the ACLU of Indiana. Back to the phones in Brenda. Hey there.
Good day, Amos. How are you today?
Fine.
Hello, Jane. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you, Brenda.
I agree with the last caller that many of the things that are in our public ear is not what my concern is either, and I support that woman that said that. Jane, are you familiar with a case in Mississippi where the Department of Justice has filed a lawsuit against Mississippi because of what is going on in their school system down there?
I am not familiar with it.
Well, what it is there is that the Mississippi school system and town offices and state offices have created a culture of the school-to-prison pipeline, which they are affirming the maltreatment of black children, children of color, and children with disabilities. So basically what is going on is that the state has used the school system as a thoroughfare to the state criminal system as a taxi cab service. That's how it's referred to. So the Department of Justice has actually filed legal suit against the state. We have the same thing going on here, Jane. And I've been asking the question of these attorneys who are propped up by the school system, off of our dollars, state dollars, which they use these attorneys to violate the constitutional rights of these children to have access to not only the special education services that they're entitled to, but how these school systems and the state has been allowed to perpetuate a continuous cycle of young people who have no possible outcome to not only finish school, but before they even get to school, Jane, these children are oftentimes ostracized through suspensions, expulsions, and referral to the criminal justice system. So my question to you, Ms. Jane, how can we use the ACLU to collectively look at what's going on? Because there's no due process, Jane. When a parent tries to file a complaint with the state office, when a child's educational rights are being denied, we don't have no due process rights because these attorneys work for the school system, which to me is a constitutional right violation.
All right, let me let her respond.
Well, I will certainly look at that case that the DOJ has brought against the Mississippi school systems. I'm certainly sympathetic to the structure in our community. I'm struggling for a better word for it that has led to bulging prisons. It's just a national shame. We at the ACLU in Indiana, we represent a lot of prisoners once they're incarcerated, and I know that doesn't help them avoid incarceration initially, but we certainly are a rare outlet for them in vindicating their legal rights once they're in prison, especially.
But you'd also have to have a pattern of complaints. From the ACLU's point of view, you'd have to have a pattern of complaints from a bunch of people to be able to almost have to class action it.
Well, that's absolutely right. We are a very small organization. We have two attorneys and one paralegal, and most lawyers in the state who see the volume of the cases that we have on our docket and hear that we have such a small team are flabbergasted. They do an incredible amount of work, and they do it incredibly well. Ken Falk is just a wonder and a state treasure. But we have to be very selective in the cases that we take at the ACLU of Indiana because of our limited resources and because of the great need. And so we pick cases that will have the greatest impact. We have to make sure that when we win for a client, that means that we're winning for not just that client, but for similarly situated people across the state.
Let me go to Kareem at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yeah, how you doing?
Fine.
Okay, on the heels of Brenda, on that case in Mississippi, the ACLU, I want you to understand that they have a thing in the Constitution that's called full faith and credit. When you do research of the DOJ against Mississippi dealing with the educational system and how they deal with minorities, that same finding there, that case been adjudicated here in Indianapolis, Indiana. My question to y'all is, the children in the school systems, segregation, desegregation to charter schools right now, the minority children at best are the ones that get dragged through the mill. The parents don't have no legal recourse. They don't have no due process of law, just like Brenda said. And then when you try to bring it to due process of law, they block it. So what I want to ask you is, what tool do Brenda have and Samantha and all the other mothers here of minority children, children at large, have to work against the legal system that is bound to keep a minor child in jail against the Constitution and the will of the Constitution and the law of the land, and says they have the right to waive that? Don't give the parents they rights, parental rights to see their child, and you almost have to riot down at the city county building to get this done. So I'm going to back off and let you answer that.
Jane?
Well, I, without knowing the particulars of the case and the particulars of the mechanism that the school system or systems in Indiana use to handle these these cases. I can't give you a specific answer, but you know, we have our website where you can.
Let me rephrase this in a couple of ways. Has the ACLU ever called a conference with community activists so that they clearly understand what it is you do and can do, what it is you can't do, and for the ACLU to also hear the frustrations of community activists and figure out, is there a way of communication? Because you a minute ago you just said you got two lawyers and a paralegal, and you probably have a greater caseload than most public defenders, not counting all the people that are approaching you. And yet you've got a community that is seeing injustice and saying, who will stand up and try to investigate these cases of injustice? And they may not understand how you operate. You may not understand that maybe there is a gem of a case out here.
Right.
Has the ACLU ever thought of that?
Well, I should preface that I'm about 2.5 months into the job. Mm-hmm. So I have no institutional memory. And I'm not aware that we've ever had that kind of a conference or a public dialogue for that purpose, but I think that's a great idea. One of the opportunities we have at the ACLU of Indiana right now is to start being more proactive and not just reactive. Mm-hmm. So reactive, we've been reactive in the sense that if you have your rights violated, and you come to us, maybe we can help you if our resources allow. We want to be more proactive in telling people what we do and why we do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right now we have a variety of purposes. We have our First Wednesday program, which you monitored our event about voting in October. We have them every other month. We have Twitter and Facebook and our website, which is www.aclu-in.org. And on that, we have a way for you communicating with us, but also seeing other places that might be better suited to meeting your legal needs.
How important is bringing documentation? It's not, my sense is, it's not just somebody calling Ken Falk on the phone and saying, I believe my civil liberties have been violated. You guys have to have hard, concrete, smoking gun proof. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. And again, unfortunately, those cases are plentiful, but we have to have that, and it has to be the person whose rights are being violated. We get a number of calls that we can't respond to, or we can't respond directly to, because they're calling on behalf of their son, their daughter, their spouse. We need the person whose rights are being violated.
So maybe it's a workshop that educates activists on what you need to bring, or what that a potential plaintiff needs to bring.
Right. And what are all the options across the community? I mean, we're aware that there in Indiana, there are very few places for people to turn to. And that's why we get over sometimes 800 calls a month from people seeking assistance.
Statewide.
Right. But they're seeking assistance, and they often have no place else to turn. Mm-hmm. And we often takes us a while, but we attempt to respond to each of those inquiries, because we recognize that often they don't get their questions answered. And we may not be the right advocate for them. We may not be able to provide representation for them, or the answers that their particular answers they're looking for. But we hope sometimes that we can point them in the right direction if we can't help them.
If people want more information about the ACLU of Indiana, how do they get a hold of y'all?
They look us up, www.aclu-in.org, or they follow us on Facebook and they follow us on Twitter.
All right, so you can go to aclu-in.org or go to Twitter. What's the handle on Twitter? aclu-in? They're going to write it down for me. There we go. At ACLU Indiana. That's simple to remember. Jane Henniger, Executive Director of the ACLU. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Amos.